financial services company Standard & Poor's is estimating the 16-day government shutdown cost the U.S. economy $24 billion. And it started as a move to defund the Affordable Care Act, which is a tactic you initially supported. Was it worth it?
Well, you know, the original debate began there, but what was on the table when the decision was made not to negotiate and talk any further, when we could not get the president to and Harry Reid to discuss what was going on, was really looking at the individual mandate. And the point was, we thought it was fair that individuals should be treated the same way as big business, because the current deal that's been cut with big business is that they are excluded for the first year from Obamacare, and we thought it was only fair that individuals should have that same treatment. And it really is a breakdown of the whole process to think that we could not get negotiations to talk that thing through and to ensure that Congress and individuals receive the same treatment as big business does. And unfortunately, none of us want to see a shutdown. And I'm grateful that we got this resolved last night and that we're back up and running today.
But Congressman, the President and the Democratic Senate were never going to go for the demands from the Republican House and Republicans. So why was it worth it to waste the time and waste the money on what many thought from the beginning and knew from the beginning was a futile exercise?
Well, you know, having divided government is not something new in this country. The founding fathers put together a House, a Senate, and an executive branch and the judicial branch. And there are ways to reconcile differences. And unfortunately, when there's a no-negotiation approach, that's not conducive, I think, to trying to find some middle ground here to move forward. And it was unfortunate that that the government got shut down. We were opposed to that. We did not want to see the government shut down. We did not want to see default occur. And, you know, last night, that's why, you know, I voted last night with the bipartisan bill that came from the Senate to get the government opened up again and ensure that we don't default on our debt here for the United States.
When you talk about the president's unwillingness to negotiate, what the president said from the very beginning is he referred to it as an extortion tactic, a tactic that did not fall within the regular and traditional framework of how the system of checks and balances work, because there was a demand to make changes to a law that had already been passed and had already gone through a re-election. Was this a prudent tactic, what the president calls holding the government for ransom?
Well, Dan, in fairness, though, the president changed the law unilaterally when he made an exception for businesses on the Obamacare first-year mandate. He did that without congressional approval. So the president unilaterally did that on giving businesses a one-year exclusion from Obamacare. So he did that unilaterally. We were asking, you know, using the regular order process to pass a bill through legislation that would give the individuals in this country the same treatment that he gave to big business. So for the president to say that the law could not be changed, he changed it unilaterally, made an exception for business and for members of Congress.
If you initially supported Republicans' demands, which led to the shutdown and the stalemate, why then did you vote for the agreement to reopen the government? What changed there?
Well, there are a couple things. As I chatted with Montanans, we were the only congressional office that kept staff. We've had to furlough half of our staff. So we had a skeleton staff in each one of our offices across Montana, taking phone calls, taking visitors, as well as our office back in Washington. It's clear that Montanans wanted the government opened up, as we all did. They also wanted to be treated fairly under Obamacare. And I remain committed to both, which is why I voted last night for this agreement that reopens the government. It also puts some important safeguards in place for the health care law. For example, it's going to make sure that that those who are applying for the subsidies, that their incomes are checked to reduce the fraud that can occur in the system. But unfortunately, the president made it clear he would rather have the government shut down until the end of it, until, you know, for months, rather than accept reasonable delays or changes to Obamacare that the majority of Americans support. If you ask Americans, do you believe that individuals should be treated the same as big business, Americans overwhelmingly say yes. If you ask Americans, should Congress get special treatment and be above the law, Americans say, of course not. And those were the two issues we brought to the table that the president refused to negotiate on.
But the stalemate seemed pretty clear and pretty entrenched 2 weeks ago. Why did that stalemate last as long as it did?
Well, it takes two sides to talk. And the president repeatedly says, I will not negotiate. And I think when there are differences between two sides, when one side says, I will not negotiate, I don't think that's a reasonable position to take. And so it's unfortunate that the president took that very hard-line position. But if you look at what we're asking for was the fair treatment of individuals and ensure that Congress did not get a special deal, Americans supported that, but also Americans didn't want to have the government shut down. And I think the president, unfortunately, he should have at least been willing to sit down and talk about these issues versus saying, I'm not going to negotiate.
Polls are showing Republicans are suffering the most from this shutdown in terms of reflection of public opinion. What long-term damage may the party incur here from this?
Well, you know, one thing about polls in politics is the polls go up, the polls go down. And you saw just what happened back in August when the president's polls were down significantly because of what's going on with Syria. Well, now, the president's polls, although I think everybody in Washington suffered, whether it's a Democrat, a Republican, whether it's the Congress or it's the president, Americans are fed up with everything back there. And so, over time, it's incumbent then upon those back in Washington to work to regain the trust of the American people. And the way to do that is start getting some results back there. What I'm concerned about, Dan, is what we voted on last night. Well, the good news is we got the government reopened up. The challenge here is we just delayed this next debt ceiling crisis by 4 months. So on February 7th, we will face another debt ceiling crisis. And the president and Congress are unwilling to deal with these issues here that create these debt problems in the first place. So I'm hoping that we're going to get Republicans and Democrats together. We're starting to see that. In fact, today, Paul Ryan's meeting with Patty Murray back in Washington, that we can start putting forth some policies, some ideas here now that will avoid having to have another crisis that is coming in February unless we deal with it now.
Do you see that as being possible? Are you hopeful that in this political climate, in this media environment, that there can be some sort of grand bargain reached to avoid this endless cycle of crisis?
Well, of course you hope. And I think realistically we've seen that Washington fails over and over again at trying to bring together both sides to craft some kind of solution to go forward. But I tell you what, you've got to keep trying. You've got to keep moving forward here. The American people need to demand that of their Congress, demand that on both sides of the aisle, demand that from the White House. That the sides work together here to craft policy here that will avoid the debt ceiling crisis coming in February. But it's even bigger than that. It's really the long-term projections right now. When President Obama took office, we were at $10 trillion in debt. We are now sitting on nearly $17 trillion of debt. It's been the fastest growth in debt in the history of this country. And the projections don't look very encouraging. We're going to be on our way to $20 trillion in debt here down the road. And so something's got to be done, because that will be an ultimate crisis, is when our debt becomes so large here that we can no longer support it. And we're putting that in the backs of the next generation. I'm a father of four children. And my four kids are inheriting this debt from our generation.
The Republican Party in Congress continues to see this division between more moderate Republicans and Tea Party Republicans, and that's a division that was really apparent throughout the shutdown. Congressman Daines, which side of that fence do you see yourself most aligning with?
Well, I'll tell you, one thing I've learned in this job is I do not like labels, whether it's the term liberal, conservative, extremist, Tea Party, you name it. Folks want to put labels on people. They want to put people in boxes. And I can tell you what, last night, I think some folks were surprised. They said, I broke away from my Republican majority and voted for that deal last night. And I've had many, many people today call me, folks who typically be on the, you know, the other side of the political spectrum, saying, you know, we respect you the fact that that you voted in doing what you thought was the right thing versus just following rank and file, you know, party politics. And so I, you know, and I'm one who have been involved in this conservation effort in the North Fork of the Flathead. The first time in 30 years we've seen bipartisan agreement within the Montana delegation to do something right in terms of conservation in this state. And so I just don't like labels. I think you look at each issue and you make it the best decision you know, trying to represent the people that have been sent back there to work for and make the decision as best you can.
I see. So would you be uncomfortable with somebody giving you the label of a Tea Party Republican?
I you know, when you're in this job, you get called about every different name, label. I get some folks say you're too liberal. Some will say you're too conservative. Some people say you're too moderate. I've literally, Dan, had all of those labels thrown at me. May I just say, you know what? I'm going to stay focused on doing my job and doing what I think is the right thing to represent the state of Montana.
Okay, Congressman Daines, rumor has it you are running for the United States Senate. Is that true?
Have not made any announcements on that, Dan. We're looking at it, but I'll tell you what, with all that's going on in Washington, I'm staying focused on doing the current job. But clearly, you know, there's a lot of folks who are speculating on that, and we'll sort this thing out in the near future. But tell you what, the to-do list is very, very long, and the House of Representatives, I'm staying focused on that at the moment.
Near future, heard that a few weeks ago. Is there a timeline set for that decision yet?
You know, do not have a timeline on it, but we recognize that, you know, the 2014 election is coming. I'll say this, though, as I've chatted with Montanans, the last Senate race was far too long. Gosh, that race, that was nearly 2 years long. And I think Montanans want to see their elected leaders staying focused on the problems that we face, because that's a long to-do list at the moment. You know, 2014 is going to be long enough to have campaigns and have spirited debates about the next election. So, you know, we'll get something sorted out here, but I don't want to see these campaigns starting so soon. Let's wait until the year of the election, and let's stay focused on the current issues today.
Congressman Steve Daines, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
All right. Thanks, Dan.